And welcome back to the Teacher's Lounge with me, Abdul.
And Ramona.
Yay, good to have you guys back. Today we are going to talk about what we said in the last episode, and that is this amazing book that we've both read, or I've read and
yes.
I'm still reading, called The Chimp Paradox. And I found this book fantastic. It was almost like a user manual, how to use your brain, how to access certain parts of it when certain issues or problems occur, or to even understand why you have reacted in a certain way. So I thought I'd first just quickly explain what the model is briefly about, and then I thought I'll go over to you, Ramona, and just get your opinion
on great
that. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay, perfect. Just want to say, before we did this, we were doing like a million mic checks, so we've been trying to figure out why my voice isn't how it used to be.
You're too shy, I think.
I was too shy, which is, I don't think anyone's ever said that before.
Now they know.
Yeah.
The real you.
So, chimp. Basically, when I had this book gifted to me by a good friend, Rudy, and it was sat on my shelf for a really long time. And I said, okay, this year I really want to try and get those books read first that have been stood around but still of interest to me. And I grabbed it and I had really no idea what to expect. And as I started reading it, it turned out that it was a fantastic, really straightforward explanation of how our brain is working with these, with its different zones. And it's kind of names them based on theories that we have about how people have evolved from apes. So even if you're not a person who believes in the theory of evolution, or you believe in something else, that's okay. The thing behind it, I think, is really powerful, because it just makes things, for me anyway, quite accessible. So it said that you've got these three main areas or zones of your brain. There's the chimp brain, which shouldn't get so much focus, but it takes up a lot of our attention. So this is the part of the brain which is really reacting very emotionally, irrationally to things. So with anger, with being upset, etc. And then you've got another part of the brain. Do you know the other part?
The computer.
The computer? That's another major part. Do you remember what the computer is doing or responsible?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I need to say I haven't read the book
we're
reading,
not.
So
no.
Don't blame me.
So the computer's like saving all that stuff.
True. Oh, yeah, the memory, yeah.
Autopilot.
Yeah.
So that basically you're doing things automatically. Mm-hmm. And what's the other one that's slower? It's an easy one, this. We are both...
Humans.
Yeah.
Wow. I felt like doing a test.
You've scored one out of three. No.
One out of three. Great.
So there's the human, the chimp, and then the computer. And for some people, these kind of analogies, these images are annoying. For some people, really useful. For me, it was very useful. But a friend of mine who's reading the book, he's like, don't quite get this human chimp stuff.
I was the same, like, with the pictures, because in the book I read, like, the kind of more... It's more appropriate for children.
Okay.
So also with the pictures, I was like, I don't get it, like with the computer and the human.
Yeah, it's
weird to think of something like this in your head.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's
it makes sense with the role they have.
You have to kind of give it time for it to make sense. I think I was the same. A human and chimp, it would make total sense. But when it got to computer, I was a bit like, what is going on? Like, my brain is a computer. It's got a computer inside the computer.
Yeah.
And anyway, so these different parts of the brain are kind of introduced and what they're good at. So the human part of the brain works at sort of a normal speed. It reacts to things rationally. Normal speed for me, Ramona for yours.
Maybe slower.
That's mean. No, I take that back.
It is. Your chimp is taking over. No, I mean, there's a funny story. When you told me about the book, I remember you told me so much about the chimp brain and like reacting too fast.
Okay.
And while you were talking, I started ordering the book on Amazon. And I think I ordered 5 other books. And you said to me like, no, that's your chimp brain. Stop ordering books. I'm like, oh, true.
That's exactly.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like there's a stimulus and then your reaction to it.
Yeah.
And that's the chimp
brain. And I reacted with 5 books from Amazon.
At least it's better than saying you're talking a load of nonsense, Abdul.
True.
No, it's like the human brain is like super rational, but it's also slow. And then there's the chimp side of the brain, which is very fast. So he says in this book that it's 5 times faster than the human brain. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have these outbursts or these bursts of tears or whatever, because it's just so quick at reacting to something that's happened. And then there's the computer side of the brain, which is storing things for later so you can do things quicker. So, for example, when you learn to ride a bike, do your shoelaces, things just become very automatic in your brain, so you don't have to think, oh, do this first, do this after. You just do it without thinking. So that's what the computer brain does. And in the book, he goes on and explains also how kind of bad habits get learnt. Mm-hmm. So bad things can end up in the computer and good things. And that's because we're filtering it through either through our chimp brain or our human mm-hmm. brain. And I found the whole book, the whole model, really fantastic, a really clear explanation. And sure, it's maybe not the perfect one or it's 100% right because it's a model. And also what we know about the brain isn't everything. You know, they're still finding new things out every day. But I found it very, very helpful. And I wanted to just get your kind of output. So sorry, for your input, basically. And I know you haven't finished reading it, but so far, what was your initial reaction when you started reading it?
It's really interesting. I mean, especially with the chimp, I think it gives reactions a good name because we all know it. We react really kind of fast to things. And now you have this picture in your head, like, oh, okay, it was like this. And I think if you're really reflective, you already know that. Mm-hmm. Kind of, oh, I reacted like this because of that. But it helps people probably to kind of reflect themselves a little bit better on, because I'm reading the one which is more about children. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting for me to read about, like, oh yeah, I know they can react differently mm-hmm. than adults, but now it makes a bit more sense, or I can kind of match that to their chimp brain. So that was really interesting. I think it's a great book, and I already thought of like sharing it with parents.
Yes,
in a parent evening or something like that, because I think everybody should read it.
Yeah, I think we've covered similar things through the Random Acts of Kindness. I think we even did one session where it had the brain.
And yeah, it's true.
It used the proper scientific terms, the amygdala.
I think you did that,
Chimp and prefrontal cortex is the human, etc.
All these hard words, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's another thing. Like, if we make the language way more accessible, mm-hmm. so call it a chimp, a lot more people can relate to it, especially children. And I had the idea, I think your idea is fantastic, sharing it with the parents. Mm-hmm. But if it was something that we could actually use as language with our kids.
Yep.
So that if we introduce it at the beginning of the year and say that, okay, look, through this year, there's going to be problems. And how we react to it is mm-hmm. going to be determined by either this part of the brain or this part. Obviously influenced by lots of different things, but how you take it up.
Yep. Okay. And I think I read that in the book. I'm not sure, but I think so. I don't know if it's in yours too, but they recommend also, like, I think a school or a class teacher did that. They had a chimp corner. So if children realize they're getting in their chimp brain, they could go into the chimp corner and be a chimp and kind of come back when they realize what they want to do or how they want to feel about. But they had kind of a go-to place mm-hmm. to kind of have that reaction without kind of annoying somebody else or like facing somebody else. And the other children then knew, okay, that's a chimp reaction. It's all good. And I thought that's a really cool idea.
Definitely. You know, I already have a chimp corner. It's your classroom.
Oh, it's so funny.
Sorry,
so
I was just waiting to deliver that.
Yeah. That was your chimp brain again. You haven't mastered it yet.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
But I mean, a lot of people, like a lot of classrooms have like calm corners or something like that. So maybe that's also a good thing.
I think the chimp corner would be great. I was wondering, do you think it needs to be quite separate, like somehow?
I mean, I think depending on how you want to, I mean, if somebody reacts really angry or like, maybe you want to have a space for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in the classroom, like in a reading corner, it's maybe not so appropriate, and you can't kind of let the chimp out.
No. So. You know what I thought? You know those sound booths?
That would be great.
But if you could close the curtains
and just scream.
No one can watch you. Exactly, yeah. I think something like that, something where it's a bit private, where nobody can hear you and see you, because also it says in the book you shouldn't let your chimp out in public.
Yes.
Because how it reacts can be very, you know, kind of inappropriate for certain places. But love the idea of a chimp corner.
Thank you. I'm going to sell it.
And it wasn't your idea, though.
I mean,
That's okay. We can steal ideas.
I tried. Every now and again. I tried.
I want to hear your thing, because you briefly said to me when you started reading it, there was this moment of realization, like, aha, about spatial awareness or something.
Yes, because like I get always pretty annoyed when we're walking around with the kids and they don't get it to go out of the way if people are like kind of walking. And it makes me like, it drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. And then in the book, they say like, they're not kind of have that spatial awareness yet. Mm-hmm. And it's also part of that kind of brain growth. Yeah, and totally. It was like, they kind of don't get it. And I'm like, oh, okay, good to know. Before I got always super angry at kids. And now I'm like, oh, they don't know how to do it. So it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
So it made sense because I didn't know that it takes so long for children to kind of grow that spatial awareness, like walking in the train station and not just bumping into people.
It's so true.
That was really interesting.
And I'm saying, when I get off the train sometimes and there's a lot of teenagers going to their school and they're just walking all over the place and bumping into me. They don't mean it personally.
It's not their fault.
No, it's not their fault. It's just their brain.
Just their gym brain. And that was a real, like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
But I think what it's done there is that it's given you understanding.
Yes.
Because I think that's the thing about all of this kind of like reading, looking into these things, is that the idea isn't that you become suddenly a better person or it transforms you, is that you just kind of understand things better. And I think when you do, then you kind of have a bit more empathy for other people and other people's situations and stuff. So I think that's a really cool instant kind of thing you got out of it. And for me too, when I heard you say that, I was like, oh my gosh, that is... Yeah, makes total sense.
Because sometimes you feel like, oh yeah, makes sense before, but you never thought about it, and now you read it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I think I can handle that situation now better. Yeah,
it reminds me of that time, the Why We Sleep book, you know, the one I lent you, it turned out it's a bit too heavy.
I haven't read it, but I'm sleeping great, so.
Probably put you to sleep.
It was too hard.
No, it was too heavy. Hard. But, you know, I think now you would handle it.
Aww. That means my English got better.
Yeah, and your concentration.
Or my concentration.
No, in that book, like, it told, you know, he kind of explained how the teen brain also develops with sleep and like how teens need way more. And so having these super early starts
is
really bad for teen brains.
Also for adults.
No, I think with adults it's okay. I am a perfect example. And it was like, oh my God, that's true. It really made sense when I was a teenager why I just couldn't sometimes get up.
Yep.
And I would end up wanting to sleep later and get up later. And I was like, oh, am I just lazy? But it actually says that the teen brain is designed to do that. It's going through a shift, so it does want to go to sleep later and wake up later. And I think some schools in the States, and I think even our former school where they work, they wanted to develop that the time changed so that it respects that brain development. And again, it just shows another example of if you understand something, you can kind of make somebody's life a little bit better.
Yeah, also in the book I'm reading, like, about the chimp brain paradox, they also say, like, if a child kind of reacts with their chimp brain, you should tell them that this is just a reaction of that part of the brain. It's not how they are or what they think or, like, their values. And I think that's really nice if you see your child, I don't know, exploding or anything, to tell them that that's not you. It's not like you did something wrong or somebody else. Yeah. It's this part of your brain. And I think that's a great tool to kind of regulate emotions and, like, kind of help them to learn to handle their emotions better.
I think that's so good. And I think that's why we should introduce it in schools and in classes, because then it just gives you the, not just the language, but also the concept so that they get it. Oh, I'm not a bad person. I'm not a bad child. I'm not a troublemaker. It's just that this is the part of the brain that was
And it's normal
that
this reaction's gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one thing that jumped at me into the book later as I got on, after he introduces those three main parts, he introduces two concepts called gremlins and goblins.
Okay.
And goblins are things that have been put on really early on in your life.
Okay.
So when you were a child, and they have been programmed into your computer, so in your long-term memory. And the goblins are bad things. So they're things that you believe, but they're then automatic beliefs. So one classic example he gives, and I was like, wow, I think we're all guilty of this sometimes, is that, like, a child comes home from school, has a drawing to show, and shows the drawing to the parent, and the parent looks at the drawing and says, oh, that's amazing, I love you. And he said, this is a goblin. This is a goblin. You've programmed your child now to associate that when I show some work, I receive love. And the other way to react is to make the two very separate. That put the drawing away and then say it separately. Oh, no matter what you drew, whatever, I love you to that child. And I was like, wow, that happens so easily. Yeah. It happens to us teachers. They say, is this good? Is this good? Does this look good? Yes, it is. You're great. Oh, yes, that's great. You somehow accidentally just say it, and then you're like, oh my God, like, what am I doing?
Because you want to be kind and you want to kind of support their work. But it makes sense.
So then that's a goblin. So then they're programmed for life. And to get rid of a goblin. No. And what was terrifying when I read the book was like, to get rid of goblins, it's hard.
Yeah.
And that's why people go do therapy and whatever later in life, because they have all those issues later on. I'm not saying that, like, oh my God, we need to be like, don't say anything now. It's just something to be aware of. Like, if we show any affection, it shouldn't be attached to something.
Yep.
Like, we should show that affection regardless of what we've received or whatever. And then the other thing was gremlins. So these are things that are similar to goblins, but they're easier to get rid of.
Okay.
So there's things that have come in, you've picked up maybe from high school, work and whatever, and you've kind of internalized them, like, oh, when I have a deadline, I always kind of stress, or when I have this kind of client, or this kind of parent kind of or child,
then dissociation between things.
And then they actually become automatic, these kind of beliefs, and you then behave a certain way. And that those are things you can actually work out by interacting a lot more with your human brain and to pick it apart. Okay. So that was really enlightening for me. And I think the bigger thing I took away was that, oh yeah, so we as parents, maybe in the future, or as teachers, we should be really mindful of what kind of gremlins and goblins there are as well. And for you, the question would be, like, from that concept of gremlins and goblins as teachers, is there anything that you think, oh yeah, there might be an area to look at more carefully so we don't fall into that?
Like with the goblins, you said, right?
Either.
I think there's a big movement at the moment, I would say. Or, like, I read a lot about that and I try, but as with the goblins, it's really hard with giving feedback. So at the moment, I really try hard to not give, like, feedback as maybe before, you did a really nice work, oh, that's a great picture, or things like, more, oh, you put so much effort into this work. And I think there is this change in giving feedback with kind of the wording instead of, oh, nice work, or like, oh, you concentrated really well and things like this, to probably kind of split up these kind of things. And also, I mean, with the gremlins, I think that's the most thing you have with, like, different subjects, like people being like, oh, I'm anyway not good in there language. So if a language lesson comes up, they're already like, I'm 100%. Out.
There you go. Yeah.
And I think these both things are really important and get more important, and I think should be looked at more in school, definitely. Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I was just thinking to myself, like, okay, what gremlin comes to mind? And I used to have a gremlin that said, I'm not good at languages.
Yeah.
And
I'm not good at math, so.
But you know, challenge gremlin, because
I'm trying hard.
Because I think you are. I think you are good at maths. I think you just haven't probably unlocked it. And it's exactly in that book.
I'm still waiting.
No.
To unlock my potential.
There's a woman who said exactly the same thing until she realizes how it is that she needed maths to be explained to her. And it turned out she was actually very good at it.
Okay.
Maybe you just haven't had the right teacher or the right kind of introduction to it. Or the other things from the childhood are so, like, I don't know, hardly ingrained into your brain. So, like, permanently, it doesn't let you, just blocks you from even taking
And
it
I think
off.
That happens a lot with children in school. Yeah.
And I think for me, like, as a teenager, my brother and sister were fantastic language learners. And my sister had French, German, down to a very high level as a teenager. My brother then Arabic and whatnot. And me, I don't know why, but I just wasn't interested in them. I didn't care. I was really interested in science and whatnot. And I didn't do well in languages because I wasn't then motivated.
Yep.
And then I just told myself, oh, I'm not good at languages. I'm not good. It's not my thing. And then only when I came and settled down properly in Switzerland, I started learning German. And then it turns out, I was like, oh, I'm actually pretty good.
Yeah, you are.
I was like, oh, this happened. Like, I learned this quickly, or I learned this quicker. And then other people said, like, that's a lot quicker than a normal person would learn it. You obviously do have some kind of strength there. And I was like, gosh, yeah, but why didn't I do that all early? I could have learned so many languages from
But I mean, maybe it wasn't the right time, or as you said, like other things kind of blocked it.
Exactly.
I mean.
No, no. And I think that shows the importance of trying to unpick people's gremlins, kids' gremlins. Like, what do they believe that they're not capable or not good at? And really trying to pick it apart. Like,
I think that that will also be a really good activity in school, like kind of really identifying the
gremlins and goblins.
Yeah, kind of doing that at the beginning of a school year, kind of knowing what they think they are, and then kind of reflecting through the year again. Are they still there? Did they change? Did new ones come? Did some leave?
And I think it's also important to know that it's not then trying to say, oh, you should identify all the things you're not good at and make them your strength. That also doesn't make sense sometimes. Of course, there's going to be people who are better at you at that and that. It's nothing about like, oh, you're going to try and make everything better. It's just the belief and how you feel about yourself. Because I think from the other side, there's the other kind of philosophy of thought is to focus on your strengths and to capitalize on those. So if you're very good at analyzing things, or if you're very good with empathizing and working with people, then you should invest more in that. And I am also a believer in that too.
Definitely.
So I think there's a good balance and different reasons why you should approach it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing about approaching different types and theories. I also read the book. I read the book about learning, and they say like really, don't do like tutoring on things you're not good at. Do tutoring on things you're good at to get that better and kind of push your confidence as well. So I think it's good to kind of include different types. But it's really important for children and adults to kind of know the different types and take out what they can use.
Definitely. I think like I remember this year too, the one child in our class, he finds geometry quite challenging. Not from the understanding, but more from a motor perspective. So fine motor perspective. And I'm like, that's just so hard to then expect from that child to do that and have that as one of his strengths. But nonetheless, you know, he tries and says, delivers his best. You know, this is the best I can do. I understand it, but I can't deliver it concrete. And I think sometimes also just recognizing that and saying that that's okay. Like, at the moment, it's like that. But who knows, maybe in the future, it's not. Maybe it changes. Just like my fixed mindset back then about languages. Yep. So would you say with this kind of model, using like the chimp paradox and all its different parts, how would you kind of introduce it if you wanted to or you could to parents or to a class?
Because the book I'm reading is more about children and they have like really basic, drawings in it. So funny when I read it in the gym, like on the treadmill, sometimes feel like people probably think I'm reading a child comic thing. But I think that would be really helpful for students to kind of show it. And I think it's important to kind of introduce it like the book does it, kind of really the different parts and what their job is. I think it would be a thing that takes a lot of time, like through the year, but I definitely want to do it, and I don't know how I would do it, to be honest, at the moment. But like giving them time to get to know all the different parts, and then as I said before, like identifying maybe some of their goblins and gremlins, and go from there on. And kind of reflect on a monthly or a weekly base, like how we're doing with the different, or like how often did we switch into our chimp brain or things like this.
Exactly.
Probably.
Like share your chimp.
Yes. Yeah. Chimp.
Yeah.
Something.
Did you chimp? Did you chimp out?
That would be cool. No. Yeah. Do you have any ideas of how you would do that?
Like not concrete ideas yet, but I definitely want to. I think next school year, when I start with a new class in the public school, I would like to definitely introduce it very early on, almost at the beginning, and just to give us that kind of shared knowledge, shared language. I would obviously try to have to kind of like translate it all into German.
True. I mean, you can kind of just the main words you can keep. I mean, the chimp.
Exactly.
Like Offenhain wouldn't sound so good.
It just sounds like an insult.
I mean, I would keep the English one.
We can see how I do with the actual like terminology.
Good luck.
And but I think definitely I'd like to have this kind of once a week where we just kind of reflect on it, that it just keeps it going. Definitely communicate it with parents, that so that they also know that, hey, you can use this terminology too with your children, and it might just make things a bit easier at home.
A really good idea. I'm currently trying, I want to try to kind of create my own learning journal for next school year for the students.
Yeah.
And I'm just had the idea today to implement the growth mindset, fixed mindset thing as well. So probably there's also kind of something to implement with the chimp paradox, so we could kind of build up something we both could use in our classes.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Do you know what's interesting? I also started developing a journal for next year.
Really?
With the children.
Without telling me.
I wanted to show you when it's done. I'm ready. After this, okay. I need to show you what I've made so far on Canva too.
Maybe we can change something and try different ones out and see.
Definitely. No, the one thing I wanted to put in the journal for next year is the Dankbarkeitsjournal.
Yeah.
Entry, so the gratefulness. Me too. Because I've been doing that with my wife, three things to be grateful of. I mean, it's so good. Like, yeah. It's such a good thing.
But it's
thing.
So hard for children. Like, because I do the Glow Grow Gratitude Journal with the grade fives. And they need to come up with one thing a day they're grateful for. And sometimes it's pretty hard for them. Like they are like, I'm grateful for the food today. Which is nice, but it's not like really deep.
Well, and it's pretty
it's sometimes pretty hard for them to come up with something or like not always say the same thing each day.
True
So I think that's still something to work on.
I think the reason why it's probably tricky for children is because it's really demanding a very rational side of that brain, that prefrontal cortex, which is also not super developed in many younger children. And like, they're living in the moment. These kids, let's be honest, the kids are living in the moment, they're enjoying, they're playing, and then to reflect on what you're grateful for it to be like really profound and deep is probably hard, right?
True. Okay.
So I think for them, maybe it is okay just to say like food.
I mean, it's okay anyway. I just something to
to implement. Let's collaborate on that.
Yeah, I think we would be a good team.
I think so. Something tells me that. Cool. Hey, I want to thank you, Ramona, for talking about your take on the chimp paradox.
Thank you too, and thank you for recommending the book.
No worries. It's recommending away.
Big recommendation to everybody to read that.
Yeah. So check out in our previous episode, we put in the show notes the link to both books. We'll pop them in again on this episode too. If you have any thoughts on what we've talked about, or if you've read the book maybe, or you're going to, please let us know.
Yep. And now on an add-on, there's I think also a specific book for children, like not about children, like for children to read.
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure,
but we can check out and
you
also put the link
in. Yeah, because I thought, that would be a good idea to make one, but if they've already got one.
I think so, yeah.
Sweet. Thank you. Okay. All right, guys. We will see you next time. Thank you for listening in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.